Downton Abbey Season 3 is here. Seasons 1 and 2 earned 9 Primetime Emmy Awards and a Golden Globe for Best Miniseries. The Hollywood Reporter has called it, quote, one of the greatest melodramas of the modern television age. Today we get a glimpse behind the scenes and perhaps get a hint or two at what we can expect this season. Don't worry, no spoilers. You don't have to tune out. Masterpiece Theater Executive Producer Rebecca Eaton is joining us on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Lindy.
This is a really exciting time for Downton Abbey fans. They've been waiting so patiently for this.
Not so patiently, actually.
Some of them, right, yeah. This show is very British, yet it's gained popularity worldwide, particularly here in the United States. And now that you know it's being viewed by so many different people, has that changed how the show is written or anything that how it's filmed or anything about it?
You mean, have we added any Chinese characters or have Thomas run off to the subcontinent? No, I think Julian Fellowes goes into his study in England and closes the door and returns to Downton Abbey. He keeps it very focused. And I think you have to tune out the expectations for it, the extent of the audience. I think the actors have to do that too. You just have to take one step in front of the other and do what you do right. The best.
A lot of research has gone into this, too. I mean, as far as creating the family crest and, I mean, really making it realistic, right?
Yeah. Yes. There is a historical advisor that is reads every word of the script. He's a former military officer, and he's actually a friend of Julian Fellowes. And he vets, the British expression, vets, to go over and double-check every historical fact. He comes on the set, and when, for instance, there's a formal dinner, he, you know, sort of directs the actors on how to sit down, how the ladies might wear their gloves, which fork. That's, you know, that's
right.
Easy stuff. But I think Hugh was telling an interesting story, Lord Grantham, that would be to you, Hugh Bonneville, told an interesting story about how sitting down to dinner entails, white tie entails, the natural inclination of a man these days, any man who still wears tails to dinner, is to kind of tuck the tails under, to smooth them down like a lady smooths her skirt to sit down. And the direction came from Alistair, the historical advisor, no, you wouldn't do that because, of course, you have someone to iron your tails, so you don't have to worry about them. Just like they iron your morning newspaper, you don't have to worry about getting wrinkled because somebody will fix that.
All right, so many little details. So did you have any idea, while filming season one, how popular this show was going to become?
Well, I think we'd all like to say yes. We saw it coming. We knew exactly what would happen. And I think both Julian Fellowes and Gareth Neame, the executive producer in England, would agree that everybody felt it was very strong. They loved it, but they didn't know it was going to do this. And nobody knew until really the first episode aired. And that would have been in England before our broadcast was in January 3 years ago. And theirs was 3 years ago last September. And when that happened, the first overnight ratings were huge. And then people began to think, uh-oh, we might have a hit. And then the audience continued to grow, and it launched itself into a whole other orbit of audience viewing. In the UK, when it airs in the UK, it's on a commercial station. ITV is the commercial network. And the share of the people watching, the audience size is about 30% of people watching television,
wow.
Which is
that's huge,
equivalent to the Super Bowl.
Wow,
country.
Well, we have a clip from Hugh Bonneville, who, as you said, plays Lord Grantham, and this was from a panel discussion that you led at a screening in New York in December 2011. And the question was, at what point did it sink in that the show was such a phenomenon?
The moment that it sort of struck home for me quite how broad the demographic was that had taken to the show was, I was at my son's school in the playground, just waiting to go home, and one of his classmates came up and said, "I don't like that, Thomas. What's going to happen next week?" And this guy was 10, you know. And, I thought, wow, wait for the Pamuk episode.
So, and you know, it's funny because when it first started, I did not see it in the beginning either until the, sort of the buzz built about it. And then around the office, people say, well, we've got to watch the next episode. Yeah. And I thought, I got to see what this hype is all about. But once you start watching that first episode, you're hooked.
You're hooked. The thing about the first season 3 years ago is that there was very little publicity for it. And we did our usual publicity, but it's being PBS, there isn't a lot of money to throw at the publicity and advertising. The name was not familiar. In fact, a lot of people called it Downton Abbey. Mm-hmm. Some people still do. Nobody knew. Just, here's this show. What is this? Should we watch it? And we did promote it on the air on WGBH, and PBS promoted it up to a point. So nobody really knew what it was. So it did take a few episodes, then word of mouth, then people rushing to catch up. And, of course, we were streaming it as well, so people could catch up that way. And you could readily buy or download the DVDs.
Right.
So it was about episode two or three when we started celebrating.
Yeah. Now, there may be a few folks in our audience who have not yet seen Downton Abbey. So,
you're kidding.
And I know this, and I know there's one in the building here for sure, but he's planning on getting up to date. So give us sort of a synopsis and overview of what the
program is. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Just, it's the Lord Grantham, his family.
Yes.
Yeah.
His, well, for those two people. the story starts in 1912 on the day that the Titanic went down, and it is our story is set in a beautiful estate called Downton Abbey, and there is a family who lives there with three daughters. And because the Titanic goes down, it with the Titanic goes the heir to Downton Abbey, the male heir, a distant relative. So it devolves that the estate will move out of the hands of the family who lives there, Lord and Lady Grantham and their three beautiful daughters, Mary, Sybil, and Edith. And the actual heir, Matthew Crawley, comes in. He's a lawyer from Manchester. He's a working man with a kind of a suffragette mother, and they are long-distant relatives, if not long lost. That would be Dan Stevens, the delicious Dan Stevens, but is Matthew Crawley with his azure eyes and his beautiful head of hair.
It's a great way to describe him, delicious Dan Stevens.
He arrives, and he is the heir, and the story unfolds. The upstairs story is that this family is desperate to keep Downton Abbey. American mother, Cora, played by Elizabeth McGovern, whose money has allowed the estate to stay in the family, but a marriage must happen. Mary must marry, and Matthew is to inherit the estate. And so there's much back and forth about trying to get Matthew and Mary together.
Mm-hmm.
That's the upstairs story. The downstairs story, there's an entire other family, not related, but group of people down there, a hierarchy. There's a very, very traditional butler, Carson, played by Jim Carter, Mrs. Hughes, the housekeeper, the cook, Daisy, the kitchen maid, and the invidious Thomas, who is the evil dude.
Yeah, poor Thomas. And nobody likes him.
What?
I said, poor Thomas. Nobody likes him.
Nobody likes him. And I have to say, Rob James Collier, who plays Thomas, is the most charming boy in the world. He's model handsome. He's gorgeous to look at, and he was here helping us do some publicity last month, and he's just a sweetie. And then there are the downstairs lovers, Anna and Mr. Bates, the lady's maid, and the valet.
Yeah. One of my colleagues here last season was saying something, which we should have called and told you about. She said, you know, they need bumper stickers that say Free Bates.
They're everywhere.
Do you actually have them?
Yes.
I didn't even know that.
You can buy, I don't think you can buy the Free Bates bumper stickers. You can go online and find them, probably.
Oh, how funny. I see. So somebody else had that great idea.
And you can get the T-shirt.
Oh, funny.
And apparently you can, through pbs.org, you can get tote bags that say, "What's a weekend?" Which is, of course, what Maggie Smith, who plays the Dowager Countess, says famously in episode one. Maggie Smith is the mother-in-law who gets all the great lines.
Oh, she's fantastic. We're talking with Masterpiece Theater executive producer Rebecca Eaton, talking about Downton Abbey. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to ask a question or chime in, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. All right, so season three airs Sunday night at 9. We pick up where season two left off. The reluctant heir to Downton, Matthew Crawley, recovered from his war wounds. He's ready to marry Lady Mary. So this first episode centers on the upcoming wedding. So Lord Grantham's wife, who you mentioned is played by American actress Elizabeth McGovern, Cora, is we get introduced to Cora's mother, who's going to be played by Shirley MacLaine. She's a new member to the cast. And I can't wait to see the interaction between Shirley's character and Maggie Smith. If we have a little clip here of Maggie Smith anticipating the arrival of Cora's mother.
When does Grandmama arrive?
I'm so looking forward to seeing your mother again. When I'm with her, I'm reminded of the virtues of the English.
But isn't she American?
Exactly.
From War and Peace, Downton still stands and the Crawleys are still in it.
I love that. Maggie Smith is just great.
They are so good together. Shirley MacLaine and Maggie Smith, just imagine it. They go toe-to-toe. Gillian must have had a ball writing these lines. Shirley flies the American flag, all American, and Maggie is, you know, tries desperately to be withering to her. So they're great.
A lot of fun. I can imagine for Shirley MacLaine, this was a wonderful, fun opportunity, but intimidating at the same time because, you know, the popularity of the show and kind of coming in with this cast that sort of had this time to gel. I would imagine a big task for her.
Well, she says she lives in California. And I think she might even live in Malibu. I'm not sure where. She says that she didn't even know what it was.
Oh, wow. Well, that's probably good then.
So the offer came in through her people. And she says she went to the hairdresser and was talking to her hairdresser saying, I've had this offer. And the hairdresser said, what? Have to do this. And Shirley said, what is it? So her hairdresser filled her in. And she had met Maggie. She tells a very funny story of how they met, but I don't dare repeat the story because I couldn't do their voices. But anyway, she had met her years ago when they were young actresses at some award ceremony where one of them lost. Anyway, so she arrived, and the community of actors in Downton Abbey made it a real point to be welcoming to her, but they had been working together for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a very specific kind of rhythm to the set and a working style. And Shirley just kind of says she came in a little holding her breath and kind of jumped in. And people were very generous to her, settled in, and off she went. And then she let the full Shirley rip.
Mm. Well, we've got another little clip of interaction upon Shirley's arrival.
Oh, dear. I'm afraid the war has made old women of us both.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, but then I always keep out of the sun. Well, how'd you find Downton on your return?
Much the same, really. Probably too much the same, but then I don't want to cast a pall over all the happiness.
How could you ever do that?
I love these lines.
I know, as you were saying, Julie must have had a lot of fun coming up with the lines here. And the two great actresses to deliver that is just going to be, and I know you've probably seen it already, but I'm sure it's just marvelous. And the drama that Shirley brings is going to be great.
I can see it again and again. any scene between two great actors you can watch.
For sure. So how much are the actors told about the season that they're currently filming? Do they know the whole storyline of the season?
Of the season?
Yeah.
They get the script. When the scripts are ready, they are all sent the scripts. They come in kind of one at a time, so they don't actually know the full detail of the whole season because Julian is writing even as it's shooting. For instance, Downton 4, which Masterpiece will co-produce and which will air next year, a Masterpiece, starts shooting in February. Next month, 4 starts shooting at Highclere. And it will go until the end of January into August. And Julian obviously has written the first, and the storylines are complete, but he writes as they're shooting. So I think the actors roughly know where things are going, but they really don't know the details, and they say the scripts arrive at their houses, you know, their home, or they get delivered when they're ready on the set, and they rip them open and read them just as we, well, most people will be watching the episodes as they air.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it's news to them, and they say they love reading. Of course, they probably go through madly finding what their characters do in that episode, like any actor, but also to find out what happens to the rest of them. And they're very, you know, they're very candid about how they come to it as we come to it.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that it airs in Britain first, and we see this. So how do you keep the storyline secret when we've got the series has already been seen in Britain, and here we are beginning the season here?
Yeah. Well, it's tricky. And the world is shrinking, and news travels faster than ever. It's very interesting because this was less of a problem in the first season, partly because it was not as, you know, it wasn't a hit in the first season, and people here weren't looking for news, or, you know, they weren't really paying attention. So the first season was fine. Second season, a little different. And the third season, of course, the profile is even higher, and people, there are all kinds of ways to find out things, and dare I say there are ways to see the show before it is available here. They are illegal ways, this is pirating the material. And we pay close attention to it to see how much piracy is going on, how many spoilers are out, and where, because there can be spoilers you know, kind of among viewers who might never watch the broadcast. Will this really affect the broadcast? Does it affect our viewers? It's very hard to measure this, but we are paying attention because part of the fun is plot twists.
Oh, sure.
Hangers.
Yeah.
And it's, you can't control it because, you know, social media, internet, really, it's impossible to control. I think it's possible for people to not go searching for spoilers. You can avoid them actually pretty easily.
Yeah, well, it does say, a lot of them say spoiler alert, which, okay, you don't look, but you know, I accidentally came upon an article in one of the British papers and I went, oh no, I didn't want to know that.
Exactly.
So everybody here said, don't tell me, and I haven't told a soul what I read, but I thought, oh, why didn't they say spoiler alert at the top?
Well, that's true. And I think people are actually, you know, if they come across one and are disappointed that they know something, they are kind of careful not to share it. So it's very amorphous. It's hard to measure, and we're evaluating it all the time. But you can always put your fingers in your ear and...
Exactly. La, 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 la.
Yeah.
We're talking with Masterpiece Theater executive producer Rebecca Eaton about the season's Downton Abbey. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. Dana's calling from Wellfleet. Hi, Dana.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, as a believer in egalitarian democracy, I thought I would find Downton Abbey rather detestable, thinking it was just idolization of aristocracy, which I feel is a perverse trend in our culture, worship of British royalty and aristocracy. But I found the story rather engaging, and I watch it at a friend's house every Sunday night, because I do see class, you know, tension sometimes implied in the story, the narrative, and it's also a very snuggly way to wind the weekend down.
Well put, Dana.
Yes, I mean, it is the story of the 1%. It is, and it is odd that in these difficult times, people are so drawn to that. Whether it's just a little distraction, you know, just... you know, another time, another place. I don't know. My view is that there is a community in that house, the House of Downton Abbey. There is a community and a dependency between the upstairs and the downstairs. And the way Julian tells the story, he treats everybody with respect, and he makes it clear that they wouldn't exist one without the other. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was awful to be downstairs. Of course, this is... a little idealized of how things are or were for the working classes. But I think it's true that there were lots of occasions of this kind of family that would exist between the people upstairs and the people downstairs, and the interdependency of it. It is also at the point in history, now we're in the 1920s, after World War I, where everything's about to change. So it is a society on the cusp of change. This is not going to last. And people are going out into the real world off the estate trying to find jobs or trying to own their own property, the downstairs people, and the upstairs people are strapped.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's social relevance there.
And so some of the dialogue, the way the dialogue is written is just so great. We have another clip from this season, Michelle Dockery, who plays Lady Mary. She and Dan Stevens are talking about the upcoming nuptials.
And why is he coming all the way here? Why not say it on the telephone?
I have no idea.
If Mrs. Wire's lawyer wants to see you and it's urgent, it means he's left you something.
I doubt it. I would have heard long before this. Anyway, I hope not.
Why?
Matthew, do come on. The chauffeur's freezing to death, and so am I.
Are you looking forward to the wedding?
What do you think?
I'm looking forward to all sorts of things.
Don't make me blush.
Matthew!
I love that. Don't make me blush.
Make me blush. Yes, well, the question is, will they actually get married?
Mm-hmm.
No, that... Of course, of true love never did run smooth, and Matthew and Mary have their issues. So
that's for sure. One of the other things we heard a little bit earlier on in Morning Edition about Highcliffe. This is actually filmed in a real castle.
Yep. It's in Berkshire, kind of Berkshire, Hampshire area, about 90 miles west of London, and it belongs to Lord and Lady Carnarvon. Who live there upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a National Trust house. It is privately held. And after Julian and Gareth, the executive producer, saw it, and Julian always wanted it to be there. Then, as Gareth says, they went and looked at 200 other houses and came back and said, yes, this is it. So it is visitable. You
really?
Go there.
Wow.
There are tours of it, not while the shooting is happening. Mm-hmm. Be very clear. You can't just, like, sneak into a shot or sit down at the table. But you can go. You can go online and find out how and when. It's very interesting architecturally because it's a much older building behind the, I don't know what you call that, crenellation, mm-hmm. the kind of fancy stonework on the outside of the house. And they shoot in on the first floor, which really looks like that.
Wow.
I heard Jim Carson in the NPR, the Morning Edition piece just before. The real furniture, rugs, books, beautiful library, paintings. They shoot in those four big rooms downstairs, the entry hall, the staircase, and a couple of rooms upstairs. All the downstairs, the kitchen stuff, is shot in Ealing Studios back in London.
Hmm.
So the cast is actually quite divided. The downstairs people might go weeks without seeing anybody from the family unless somebody comes down to the kitchen.
Well, and the house is such a mansion, castle is such a part of you know, it's a character in itself. And Michelle Dockery was asked about that at that screening I mentioned earlier. They asked the question about the house as a character in the show.
Oh,
I mean, for me, I feel the space around you. You know, the height of each of the rooms and the space around you, it sort of does something to me physically. It gives you a kind of confidence that I think the aristocracy had, and that's what it feels like for me to work there. It doesn't feel like it's our own. I mean, we can't drink anything other than water in the house. We can't eat in the house. There are rules, whereas at Ealing Studios, where most of the downstairs, most of the set is there, and some of the bedrooms, the interior of some of the bedrooms is shot there. I feel more at home there at Ealing.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yep. I think she describes it well. And you can't tell looking at on the screen whether this is that a real bedroom or a built bedroom.
Yeah, no, it's like you said, that attention to detail.
Speaking of detail, is when they get into those costumes, because they affect your posture. Mm-hmm. They affect, particularly ladies, how much you can move, how you have to sit. And you can see these actors kind of transforming between takes. There's a lot of time between takes or between scenes when they're sort of hanging around or eating lunch, and then it comes time, and they are so carefully dressed, made up, coiffed, mm-hmm. that they kind of, you can see them kind of
to get into character,
standing
yeah.
up straighter, moving more slowly,
yeah.
and get becoming of the period.
Well, and we have an email here. What's in store for Thomas? I watch waiting for him to redeem himself like O'Brien had. I think I like watching because it became a world of first world problems to real problems, much of what people are dealing with today. Also, is Julian going to make a special appearance? I remember him as an actor in Monarch of the Glen.
Well, first, Julian, I should probably say watch the show, but no, that wouldn't be fair. He does not make an appearance.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even do an Alfred Hitchcock. Alfred Hitchcock used to be in.
Right. Somewhere in the background,
in
yeah.
one of his movies. No, at least I haven't found him yet. And Thomas, season 3 is very big for Thomas,
mm-hmm.
particularly the later episodes, which we will air here in February. So really, watch Thomas and O'Brien. Things happen there, and you see a whole other side of Thomas, and a little bit of an explanation of why Thomas acts the way he does.
I'm so glad to hear that, because I know with O'Brien, you know, you didn't like her for a while, and then you saw this other side of her, and you went, see, it just goes to show how complicated these relationships are, and it's just, wonderful
yes.
to watch.
In a way, there are a couple of people I think it's interesting. There are several sides to lots of people. Maggie Smith's character, you see her being very haughty and imperious, and then she'll do something incredibly humane and generous.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are character, and Lord Grantham even
right.
stepped over the line.
He did, and we're going to have to leave it there, Rebecca, because we're out of time.
But oh, dear.
Again, you
well,
can...
I have to say one thing.
Go ahead quickly.
It's been absolutely great, but the name of the series is Masterpiece, not Masterpiece Theater anymore.
Oh, okay. That's an update I did not catch. Again, you can see Masterpiece Downton Abbey Sunday night at 9 on WGBH Channel 2. There's also a screening of that episode that will be shown at the new Martha's Vineyard Film Center Sunday afternoon. Rebecca Eaton, executive producer of Masterpiece, thanks so much for being with us and giving us behind-the-scenes glimpse.
Thanks, babe.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.